This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for joining us for How She Does It. On this show, we talk about all things women, money, and power. I'm Karen Feinerman. I've noticed a change in the fashion industry over the past few years, with a shift away from fast fashion. H&M, once a stock market darling, is well under 50% of an all-time high. This is in no small part from concern about the waste that comes from fast fashion that was once considered disposable. And the secondhand retail trend is continuing to gain steam, and I do what I can to help on The Real Real, often. So what's driving all of this? Gen Z is seeing the effects of climate change firsthand and is committed to changing the landscape of the way we shop. Before we get into the interview, I want to take a quick moment to tell everyone that we're on YouTube. Subscribe to the show there so you don't miss an episode. My guests today, Jensen Neff and Ellie Chen, found out just how much fabric goes to waste in the fashion industry and created their sustainably sourced clothing brand, Oddly. They were named on the Forbes 30 Under 30 list and are one of Fortune's up-and-coming Gen Z brands to watch. And they are committed to creating ethically sourced clothing that's also playful and vibrant. And in the interest of preparing for this interview, I did buy some Oddly navy blue gingham boxers that are totally adorable. Welcome, Jensen. Welcome, Ellie. I'm really excited to have you here, and I can't wait to hear your story.
Thank you so much for having us, Karen. We admire you so much in all that you've built and done for women carving their own paths, and so excited to speak with you today about Oddly.
Well, I'm excited to hear your story. So, okay, how was Oddly born, and did you do this together?
I'll start, and then you can jump in, Elle. Again, thank you, Karen, for having us. We adore you and look up to you. Ellie and we always debate what meal it was over, but it was definitely in a dining hall at Stanford on our second day at Stanford. And we met, and I think it was this instant, both friendship in and out of the classroom. I always say it's harder to meet someone who can dance between those two worlds and be a soul partner in work than a romantic partner. It really is so rare. And Ellie and I fell in love with dreaming up companies in the classroom and also sitting outside of the classroom and thinking about why people in our class were buying from certain brands, why they were attracted to certain areas of campus, really thinking about spaces and how products within spaces could be an invitation to community. That drove our friendship. And then our senior year at Stanford, we were asked to create a capstone project, which was the final product design project at Stanford. And within that, we started Oddly.
Do you have a different backstory, or do you think that it felt the same way to you? Whatever the meal was at Stanford.
Yes, I can add on. I absolutely echo that Jensen and I shared a special friendship in which most of the subjects of our conversation were around what products and spaces were bringing people together. I think we're in a moment where more than ever before, what we wear and what we eat and what we signal about both of those things are our values and are what allows us to connect to our peer group. And I think both of us were fascinated by that from a young age at Stanford. In the class project, we essentially started what would become Oddly. The origin moment was finding out that 14 million pounds of fabric is wasted in the fashion industry daily. That's not just clothing, that's full rolls of fabric that is a result of just the exorbitant amount of clothing that is created today. And the goal of the class was for us to make 5 patchwork upcycled shirts. Jensen used her mom's sewing machine to create these pieces. We were both absolutely falling in love with the project and creating clothes that we wanted to wear and that we felt didn't exist in the market at that time. They sold out immediately. We had an 8,000 person wait list. It was sort of the first introduction to a very important business principle of supply and demand. No one knew we were only selling 5 shirts, but it was this moment of what was the future of community and clothing going to be in the fashion industry, and feeling like us two could make a really good team to create a company that told that story.
So you were both studying more design than fashion, right? But you sort of seamlessly made this jump into fashion. Did it just feel organic to, I don't know if it's a shift, I don't know what you would call it.
Yeah, I think that, well, the major at Stanford is, I think they call it an interdisciplinary design major within the School of Engineering, but you take a range of classes, everything from psychology to human-centered design to physics and math, and even some art classes. I'd say I fell further on the art side and Ellie fell further on the business side. And where we came together was a love of brand and storytelling and community. And so it was a really cool major that allowed us to do both and was a super entrepreneurial major. And I feel like while it has been, there's been so much learning that we've had to do in the fashion industry over the past 3 years, a lot of it coming from just knocking on doors in downtown LA. A lot of it is hidden by people because they don't want to share their manufacturers, how they do things. It's not an open industry for a reason. And so that part of it, we've had to learn, and it's been a challenge, but also a really fun part of building Oddly. And then I feel like what Stanford prepared us for was all of the rest, creating really strong bones of a company and learning how to build culture and a team and work with other people.
It played to what makes Oddly special to have not had a traditional background. And I think it led us to play a little bit outside of the set rule book within fashion, because we honestly didn't know when we first started Oddly. And the result of that is that pieces like the custom baby tee that thousands of people across the country now have their names on, and Jensen can maybe share the process of coming out with that shirt. But I think every product we have stems from a story and a reinvention of a product rather than more of a traditional creating of a fashion line, which we now have learned a lot more about. But anyways, I think that freshness can sometimes play to an advantage too.
So was there a moment then, you're doing this project, and what was the sort of moment where you really thought, wow, you know what? I don't know what your other plans may have been after college, but that, wow, this is our path. We're going to do this. How'd you make that leap?
So the two of us were going on a post-grad end of Stanford celebration, which at the time it was COVID, and it looked like a 20-mile hike from Marin County across the Golden Gate Bridge into San Francisco. And both of us had been thinking, I think, deeply within us. We had always both wanted to start something. And I looked at Jensen and I asked her if she would want to go for it with me. It felt like there would be no better time to start. We had a little bit of that wait list that I mentioned, but it also felt like something that we would have done regardless, just because we felt so strongly about it.
I mean, it was like a proposal and a marriage. I mean, you guys are in this together for better or worse, right? All right. So tell me about the production process there. I want to back up a little and talk about what's the raw material, which is the leftover fabric. How big of an issue is that? And how do you access it for Oddly?
Yeah, I'd say just a little bit more background on dead stock, which is a whole world that we had to learn about entering the industry. But right now, you can think of it as a circle, a fabric cycle. And often, after full fabric rolls are made, those are sent to brands, and the majority of waste, or a large portion of waste, comes from brands overproducing their fabric. So this is full rolls of fabric. They're perfectly good fabric, but it's more beneficial for the brands to landfill or burn the fabric than it is to keep them in cycle, kind of for two reasons. One of them is logistically, there aren't many options for the brands to resell. And then two, for copyright reasons and also for artistry, you know, these brands are creating fabrics that are unique to them. So it's just a tricky issue. And right now, thanks to some incredible people in the industry, Queen of Raw is on the East Coast, Rag Finders is on the West Coast, and these are dead stock warehouses that's whose main goal is to keep this fabric in circulation. So to keep it in that cycle, put that fabric back into warehouses where someone like Ellie and I can go in. It takes an intense amount of time and testing, because this isn't, think about winding through mazes of, it could be a roll with 10 yards on it, it could be a roll with 1,000 yards on it, and then once you finish it, there's no more after that. So it's a lot of, there has to be a lot more intention working with waste fabric than ordering what could be endless rolls of cotton from China. That's kind of where we've been working. We've been mainly working with a warehouse in downtown LA.
I didn't even know that that was a thing, warehouses of excess fabric. So, okay, so you have to then work backwards from, exactly. You might know how much a roll is, but you don't know how much can we produce and how do we gear up for that?
Exactly. And that's the part that then it translates. I do all design and creative for Audley, and it really is flipping the design process backwards, where usually as a designer, I'm sketching out a final piece and picking exactly what fabrics I want for it. And this, the brain has to work backwards, where you walk into a warehouse full of fabrics and you're thinking of what can be made with this, what can't, what do I have to test it for? Will these fabrics work together? So it's a lot more time intensive and takes a lot more care, but I really do believe that the final product can be so much more special and have so much more of a unique nature to it. And people have really reacted to that.
Okay, so Ellie, you are the business side of this equation. How did you start? Did you have any money? How did you start this, and where are you now?
So we started out in another non-traditional way, maybe for a clothing brand. We did a Kickstarter, which for those of you who aren't familiar, is a crowdfunding platform often used more for tech products than fashion, but we wanted to get a certain amount of money to make our first collection. In fashion, the cash flow cycle is pay for your inventory and manufacturing upfront and then sell after. So you need a certain amount of money to get going and create that first product line. We were fortunate and put a lot of work into raising just an initial $50,000 in a month through that. That allowed us to do our first patchwork pieces here in downtown LA. And then from there, we did a small angel round. I think the future of retail and consumer is less venture capital and growth driven at all ends and more focused on profitability. And we've been since fortunate to grow into a multi-million dollar brand and be profitable last year and have a working capital credit line. So that's been, I did not know a ton about finance before. I've spent a lot of time and have also had a lot of good support, but that's where we are now.
So that's kind of amazing that you're already self-sustaining. So let me ask you, was there any wisdom you got along the way that turned out to be completely wrong and thankfully you ignored it?
Definitely. We've gotten so many different opinions on the right way to fundraise within fashion. And I really do think it's a transition period where, you know, a lot of the people that we looked up to were in a wave of D2C consumer funding where they were raising so much more than we could even comprehend. And I think there's still people who believe in that and then others that believe that you shouldn't raise at all in order to grow a healthy fashion business. And I think Ellie and I, in a lot of ways, had to go with our gut, which is scary and also turned out to be the right decision for us.
And I think it points to, people told us you should add a tech element and have a resale platform, or you should look into fashion and AI. And at the end of the day, that's not what Audley is. Audley's a consumer brand for the next generation of creative, dreamer, kind, anyone who wants to be a part of it. But we had to basically stay true to who we were and know that with time and work that would catch on and that could still be a really viable business model rather than chase something else that might have positioned us better for another route of funding.
You weren't driven by, we want to make this as big as possible and blow up as quickly as we can.
We want to grow it big, and we always have, and we were going to do that in any way that allowed us to grow into profitability quickest. And I think it was figuring out how to do that. But I think at the beginning, it was just a lot of learning and a lot of people telling us different things and different ways to build the business. And that also included people telling us that we had to build in a marketplace into Oddly in order for us to be able to raise in VC money, and other people telling us just focus on one product, other people telling us to build out hundreds of SKUs right away. It just was so much different advice that can be really overwhelming, I think. And we had to develop hard shells in going with our gut.
I think it also was always a matter of when and not if for me and Jens, which we were so grateful to have each other, because at points one of us would teeter and maybe be a little bit less sure and the other would pick up in the beginning years when it was a little harder, whether it was getting 20 no's from the first manufacturers when our purchase orders were so small to finding the right very initial investors who believed in us. I think there has to be such a deep belief in the mission and each other, which we were lucky to have and are still.
I mean, I think that partnership is just so central. It's probably unimaginable for either of you to think about doing it alone. But invariably, you must butt heads on occasion. So how do you work that out?
That's another piece of advice that I remember someone telling us, that there was a 0% chance that we wouldn't hate each other by the end of working a couple years together. I also think there have been a lot of warnings about two female friends working together. And honestly, people make it out to be the scariest, most emotional thing. And for us, it's been really easy. We both really love working and we're both really communicative. And obviously, every single day things come up, but we say them as they come up. And I couldn't imagine building with anyone else. And I also think it's so, I encourage younger women to work with another female partner.
And I think when things do come up, we are fortunate. I think I've probably had the most confrontation. I'm not the most always confrontational person, but our relationship has helped us learn how to do that. And I think from my end, Jensen is one of the most gifted artists and creative. She breathes what products need to be brought into the world and what people want to be a part of, and has been going to art school since she was tiny. And I feel so fortunate on the other end to think about how to scale her art and bring it to so many people. And I think both of us always have a push-pull of artistry and scale, and we both want both. I'm normally a little more on the scale side and she's a little more on the artistry, but we both deeply get each other and have the same vision for what we want, which is the main thing.
Also, we have constant open discussions of like, does this still feel like what you want? Are you still learning? What is our vision for the next 5 months, 10 months, year, whatever it is? And I think it just helps us continue to realign. Because obviously there are moments where Ellie and I will come into the office and say, be having a crisis of what does the world really need right now? And are we building that? And how can we realign to be building what this generation needs in a brand? And big discussions about overproduction and also about how we can scale quickly. It's just all out in the open and it's so fun.
And our team has grown. So we have a couple, one in particular, full-time incredible employee who's been with us for 2 years, a couple people basically working around the clock, fulfilling orders, and then tens of dozens of seamstresses who we work with. So I think that as a company grows, I've been so fortunate to not only now speak with her every day, but some days, some weeks, we barely speak at all because we're both so busy managing different parts of the business, which I think has been really healthy too.
All right. So let me ask you about getting the credit line. Literally, how did you approach that? You can just walk into a bank and say, hi, this is Jensen.
I did.
You did. Okay, great.
I have Ellie credit. This was a 7-month process of her truly meeting with waking up at the crack of dawn, putting on
I was
her
wearing,
most
I was wearing formal clothes. A suit. I honestly, we don't work in finance. I was wearing a pantsuit.
And would wake up and bring coffee and meet with anyone she could. And just honestly, she speaks to at least three different advisors a week getting advice on how to do this stuff because we're young and we have an incredible network that we're so grateful for. And Ellie worked her butt off to get the credit line. It was so exciting when it came through.
But I also think growing up, going to Stanford, I had only been exposed to growth capital and I didn't really know about working capital or debt. And we were selling out constantly, going viral a lot on TikTok, and we would have a problem where we would be getting tens of thousands of site visitors to our site and only have, you know, 50 boxers on hand. And we were leaving a lot of customers entering the community and revenue on the table. And getting a line of credit is hard. I think as a 24-year-old at the time, first-time founder with only max 10 years of credit history and first-time founder, it is difficult, but did show up to all the big banks, Citi, et cetera, went through the process. I realized that talking to bankers, which Karen, you also know so much more than I do, but is a different language around profitability and responsibility than it is from growth on the venture side. But ultimately, an incredible small bank gave us a small business revolving line of credit. And I do believe that's what enabled us to now have an office full of inventory that we're selling through so quickly. And exactly like you said, we don't need it as much currently, but it's so great to have.
So just for people who don't mind, I know a revolving line of credit means when you need some loan, you can draw it down and take the money. And then when you don't, you put it back and it's just open for you to kind of like a revolving door, use around as you'd like. Okay, so I love you just going in there in your suit that you probably haven't worn since until you go back to renegotiate the line.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for the New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
So early on, you just went viral on TikTok. Was that an intentional move or how did that come about?
This is one of the things that I love talking about most because I think it's where I spend a ton of my time. That summer, I spent the entire summer. I've always been obsessed with different social platforms and the ways that social platforms can be used most effectively to sell. And I think it's a time where they're changing so rapidly in trend cycles. Even in the past couple of years since we started Oddly, went from 12 months to 10 months to 5 months to now, I think trend cycles can exist almost daily. And learning how to build within such a rapid trend cycle climate and also stay true to ourselves was so just such an interesting process. But that summer, it was right when TikTok was starting to blow up and there wasn't a ton of content from brands on the platform. And I talked to Ellie. I spent the whole summer filming myself on my mom's sewing machine and then would piece together clips and send her we'd get on FaceTime and would write a storyline using everything we learned during our time at Stanford about how to build brand storylines, and did a ton of research on how, you know, the different times that we're working on TikTok and how quickly things had to be said and what way information was best translated on that platform. And I think Ellie is just a brilliant writer. And so the two pieces came together and we were putting out content on TikTok a lot earlier than other brands. And that was the right decision. And now every single brand is posting every day and there are full-time jobs for every single corporation's TikTok account.
Uh-huh. So, I mean, I guess it was unimaginable what the effect of that would be, how big it would be.
I have a friend who we were talking about it. She's also an entrepreneur and has used the platform so well. It is unbelievable how many football fields of people you can get for free through video content. It is unbelievable. And I also think it's gotten so much harder since the platforms have become so saturated. So we started putting stuff up at the right time. There's never been a time in history where you can reach so many people for free relatively easily as now.
And that's a lot of, per the financing and having a mix of a bootstrapped model, that's really what allowed for it, was a lot of Jensen's gifts in social media and being able to reach a million eyes for free, whereas in the past that would have cost hundreds of thousands of dollars on Meta ads. We think about it as a way of Jensen looks at every social media platform as a tool and looks at how everyone else is using it and then thinks about how we can use it differently. So it really is, I'm so glad you asked that question because it is a lot of what is special about Audley, I think.
So do you then even need a big advertising budget?
So to relieve some pressure off of Jensen and both of us, neither of us wake up every morning and want to go on. We're figuring out, don't go on camera every day and have a pressure for a new viral story of product or concept. We have been doing some paid ad for the very first time, just because for the first time we have content, inventory, money to do so. But we believe we still have so many people to meet organically, and that will continue to be hopefully the core.
A lot of it too is like, I do think it's beneficial for founders to be on camera right now a lot. And I also think it can be hard mentally, and I also don't think it can be the best thing mentally to be, you know, putting so much value on how the outside world perceives you every single day. And I think that we're purposefully trying to set up the company in a way that Ellie and I can dip in when we want, but also not, you know, have to
live by it.
Because I don't think that's what either of us want, even though I do think it would probably help the brand.
Well, dovetails with what you were saying about transparency for founders and people feeling like this is who makes this and this is how, you know, this is why we price it this way. And I get it, but a masterful job on so many fronts, from TikTok to getting a working capital line. Amazing. But are there people you really admire in your industry? You think, wow, I love the ethos of that company. Who are they?
The origin of inspiration really was Patagonia. I think there's very few companies who have stayed by their mission so strongly while meeting so many, probably millions and millions of customers. So that was, we actually visited their headquarters together in our senior year at Stanford, and it was sort of part of the origin of Audley, of how has this company done it so well for activewear and what is the version for us going to be. And I think they've continued to be a North Star. And for Jensen, 100%. I mean, I think so many artists.
I studied art history and was a tour guide as well at Stanford. And I feel like so many of my inspirations come in the form of fine artists, but also female founders. And mm-hmm. Ellie and I have been both so interested in the blend of consumer and the food space, and look up to the Sweetgreen founders a ton. Love people building in LA even more in a brick and mortar way. But in terms of fashion designers especially this year, I've just been thinking so much about Emily Bode and how she stayed true to her mission and balances art and a beautiful, functioning, big company. So I love her.
And Stella McCartney.
Stella McCartney, too.
Ah, okay.
We do something called Friday Muse, which is basically every Friday, one employee at Rotates presents on someone or something that's been an inspiration to them. It could be in history or currently in the fashion industry, and they create a PowerPoint. And so that's kind of like our weekly wrap-up of the week.
That's a great thing to do. And you'll find inspiration outside of yourself then from what inspires other people. That's a great thing to do. All right, I have a question about your model. So you wanted to get away from fast fashion and disposable and very inexpensive items. And so your price points are higher. And was that a difficult decision to make? I know that it costs a lot of money to fabricate things well, right? So how did that sort of calculus get made?
I think that it is hard. We've come to a spot in the fashion industry where people both want things to be made ethically and to still be paying $10 to $20 for a shirt. And unfortunately, a lot of times those two things can't coexist, but it's something that Audley cares about so much. And I think at the core of it is if a product is good enough and if the quality is high enough, people will pay for it. And we design things with hopefully keeping it in mind for 5 to 10 years rather than in the fast fashion industry, it's often 5 to 10 wears before being thrown away. I think how we've thought about it in terms of telling the customer about our pricing is we do a fair amount of price transparency over TikTok explaining this is made where it costs how much to cut and sew. This is what the fabric is. Because I think the main thing that the younger generation wants is just to know what's going on. I think the days of having really anonymous CEOs at some of these Shein and other like companies where people just do not know what their practices is, I think pricing can be justified when you explain what is happening and why it is the price that it is.
I think it's also interesting, the number one critique we get is around pricing, but it's also the number one thing that people say that they love about the brand, or at least one of the top things is, you know, our ethical pay of workers. And both can't exist. You can't have a shirt for $10 with a worker making more than 50 cents. It just can't exist. And so something that we're trying to do is even explain why, if you're looking at a $60 white shirt and a $5 white shirt, how you can break down how much the seamstress is getting paid for each.
I was surprised to see the rise of Shein and Temu after the fall of H&M and Zara, and just in terms of their stock price. That was sort of surprising to me. Last question before we go to the lightning round. What are your ambitions? Think of it on any scale that you want, 3 years, 5 years, size, anything. When you think about where are we taking this? And you can have different answers, of course.
I think I want everyone to be, I want Audley to be a household name. I want most people ages, kids to people my parents' age, having an Audley product in their households. And I want, when the brand comes up, for someone in the room to say, oh yeah, I met someone through that brand, or oh, I made a friend in line at a coffee store because we were both wearing it. I want it to scale while also maintaining that intimacy that it has now, which I think is a hard challenge, but something that both of us dream of every day and are working towards. Mm-hmm.
That's a good answer.
I loved how Ellie put it. I echo everything Ellie said. And then I also think Ellie and I are, I'm 26, she's 25, and we're simultaneously learning how to grow up and be the most graceful and fully formed versions of ourselves. Also build a culture with the team and also build a brand and a community for the world. And I think that balancing all three of those and taking time to have fun while doing it is my dream for us over these next 5-10 years.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. On our show, we help listeners like you make the most of your finances. I sit down with NerdWallet's team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. We answer your real-world money questions and break down the latest personal finance news. The nerds will give you the clarity you need by cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. We don't promote get-rich-quick schemes or hype unrealistic side hustles. Instead, we offer practical knowledge that you can apply in your everyday life. You'll learn about strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. And you'll walk away with the confidence you need to ensure that your money is always working as hard as you are. So turn to the nerds to answer your real-world money questions and get insights that can help you make the smartest financial decisions for your life. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
From the latest in artificial intelligence to new apps and business upgrades, the tech industry is always changing and growing. So keep up with the Daily Crunch podcast from TechCrunch. With new episodes released nearly every day, the Daily Crunch gives you a brief overview of the biggest tech headlines, and it's all delivered in around 5 minutes or less, so you can easily hear about the latest updates while trying some of those updates for yourself. Listen to the Daily Crunch now, wherever you get your podcasts. That's the Daily Crunch, wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so we are going to move on to the lightning round. Now, this is just would you rather, and we'll just go Ellie first, then Jensen. Ellie, Jensen. Okay, ready? Just come. First thing that comes to mind. Okay, here you go. Okay, downtown LA or downtown Brooklyn?
Downtown LA.
Oh, downtown Brooklyn.
Okay. Natural wine or hard seltzer?
Natural wine.
Natural wine.
Okay. Day at the park or day at the beach?
Day at the beach.
Day at the beach.
Surfing.
Laugh uncontrollably or be moved?
Laugh uncontrollably.
Be moved. That's such a good question.
Okay. Okay. Baby tee and jeans or dress and heels?
Baby tee and jeans.
Dress and heels.
Ah, okay. A surprise. Rams game or Dodgers game?
Dodgers.
Dodgers.
Okay. I think I know the answer to this. Growth at all costs or profitability?
Profitability.
Profitability.
Okay. Devil Wears Prada or Zoolander?
Devil Wears Prada.
Devil Wears Prada.
All right. Fiction or nonfiction?
Fiction.
Fiction.
Okay. What are you guys reading right now? Anything good?
I just finished a memoir, actually, which isn't classic fiction, called Everything I Learned in a Chinese Restaurant, about a writer looking back on his experience growing up in his family's Chinese restaurant in Detroit.
Ah, interesting. Okay.
I just finished Educated, so that also is nonfiction.
Okay. That was really good. Educated. Amazing story. Okay. Last one, what is the best investment you've ever made and the worst investment you've ever made for each of you? And any definition of investment is fine.
Best investment, literally, and mostly my only, I guess, is my mutual fund. And then my working partnership with Jensen and the time that I also spend with my friends and family. So those three. The worst, I guess, might have been Ethereum, just because it's still one of my only. And I might not have done it at the right, still learning about that space and might not have done it at the right time.
Okay, good answer. All right, Jensen.
Best investment is probably all the time I've spent making things with no reward for them, because there have been so many thousands of hours of me using my hands and making things that didn't turn out right. But that's the only way that I could be in the role that I am now. And then
that's a great answer.
My worst investment is caring about what other people think. And that's, I'm still working on.
Excellent answers, both of you. Okay. Ellie, Jensen, I mean, I'm so excited for you. It's sort of amazing what you've done in such a short time. And thank you so much for coming. Well, where can people find you beside on TikTok?
Thank you, Karen. This was such a wonderful morning with you. And you can find us on, we're pretty up to date on our Instagram, which is just @oddly, ODDLI. and on TikTok also. I think it's Oddly Clothing on TikTok, and hopefully in more in-person events this year. That's a really big goal of ours.
Thank you guys so much. I really appreciate your time and congratulations. Amazing.
Thank you so much, Karen.
Thank you so much for joining me today on How She Does It. And thank you so much to Jensen Neff and Ellie Chen for showing us how to create a clothing brand that defies conventional wisdom and speaks directly to a new generation. When you have a moment, please follow us on Apple Podcasts and subscribe to updates from the Her Money community at hermoney.com/subscribe. Our producers are Catherine Tuggle and Haley Pascalides, with help from everyone at Her Money. This podcast is mixed and mastered out of CDM Sound Studios. Our music is from Video Helper, and our show comes to you through Megaphone. Have a great week, and I look forward to seeing you here again. Onward.